Russ, you really are 6'4".
I am 6'4".
How have you not made like a million women pregnant?
Only like half of them.
Jesus.
What's up,
nice to meet you. How are you?
I'm very sick. Pump it.
What's up, guys?
What's up?
I'm Alex. How you doing?
Alex, nice to meet you guys. How you doing?
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Everyone who is enjoying food, please continue to do so. But I'm breaking in for a shocking and devastating news story. Coming to you live from Black Eyed Sally's here in Hartford, Connecticut, is five of the five members of A Dime Back. Huge round of applause.
You know who sucks? Me.
For the premiere UConn podcast. Can I say premiere? It's a premiere UConn podcast. So for the next 50 minutes, they are going to grace your eardrums with the sultry sounds of UConn athletics. So please join me in welcoming with a gigantic round of applause for podcast hosts that never receive it because they podcast from their bedrooms. A big round of applause for A Dime Back.
That wasn't as
smattering of applause. Thank you.
I like it. That was great.
It was more of a smattering. So everybody, welcome to the first ever live edition of the A Dime Back podcast. My name is Tyler Van Buren. I'm joined today on my far right by Peter Bard.
Rest in peace, Meech.
All right. And Russ Steinberg.
I am Russ.
And Megan Bard.
Hello.
And our producer, Alex Cullen.
Hello, hello. I'm really excited to not talk about football today.
That's right. It's kind of on brand. So first things first, thank everyone for coming out. This is a really great event with two really great organizations. The Husky Ticket Project is really doing some great work, both introducing new fans to the UConn experience and helping some disadvantaged kids that could really use a break and something fun to do. It's a really great cause, and we really appreciate it. And, of course, the Susie Foundation doing great, great work for folks with ALS and their families. Just two really great organizations, and then we're here making up bad hashtags for UConn basketball players. So it's all equal is what I'm saying. It's all the same thing.
This really feels like one of our normal podcasts in the way that also now no one is listening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Except now I really can't hear you guys either. So I'm just going to be talking to myself this whole time.
Fair enough.
I can hear you, Peter.
I'd like to a shout out to our number one fan, Russ's dad.
Russ's dad. Everyone clap it up for Russ's dad. Our benefactor.
Yeah.
We'll talk. So I guess we haven't done a pod in a while. Let's sort of catch up on where UConn is in the season. We had to save all our energy for this.
Yeah. Sure.
So really the biggest development, I think, since the last time we talked is James Bouknight is now the star of the team.
Oh.
He's good.
Yeah. I mean, what do you guys think? What have you seen from him that's making him sort of elevate to the level he's reached so far?
It would be the scoring points portion of his game, I think.
I think we reached a point now where Bouknight has realized that like his teammates aren't very good at basketball, but he is. So he has kind of learned how to take over a little bit when he has to.
Yeah.
I still think you're probably, I mean, hopefully this continues, but like remember this guy, we were very excited after his first couple of games. He looked amazing. And then he's still a freshman. You're going to have some ups and downs. We're going to need other guys to continue to step up. But right now, he really looks like he's got the kind of scoring talent that this team has been missing from someone who can, like, consistently put up points a few possessions in a row and help you win games against good teams like we did against Cincinnati.
It's been nice to see somebody who can score in a multitude of ways. You know, he can score off the dribble. He's got that nice little floater. He's starting to make some threes. He can score up by the basket. So it's been nice to see somebody with multiple options for how they can score points.
I'm not used to seeing somebody from UConn who could score in multiple ways.
Yeah, for sure.
It's been a while, certainly, since we've had that kind of talent. And so it's really, we've been talking about this a lot and how, you know, exciting this is for next year, that you've got these talented guys who are starting to take over games, but also like maybe they could also win enough games this year that this could be a pretty fun year too. So,
and I don't want to like just completely change the course of this year, but I think Bouknight's emergence the last few games has gone right with Jalen Gaffney becoming a big part of the offense as well.
He has just become such a solid ball handler, and he's such a calm presence. When he's running the offense, things run really smoothly. He makes really good choices. He doesn't turn the ball over much. And, you know, he's starting to show some signs that he can score as well, you know, making some shots, getting to the basket. And he's such a great passer. He finds guys in good places. It's been really interesting, I think, over the last few games to see these young guys, Brendan Adams, another one, to really step up their game and take over more of the offense. And it, I think it really bodes well for, you know, next year.
Yeah, we'll get more into next year, too, in a little bit. So that was sort of the positive, right? Gaffney and Booknight come through.
That's all we need to talk about.
We don't discuss negative things on this podcast.
Never.
What do you guys think Akook needs to do to sort of regain the, you know, the level of accomplishment he had in the first couple months of the season?
He needs, I mean, he came out, he looked great. Guys, the teams have made adjustments against him. He needs to adjust back. He needs to sort of anticipate what guys are going to do against him like he was early in the year. Now they're doing different things. He needs to adjust to that. And also it would help if they had another post player who could do a lot of the jobs you want your post player to do. You know, you can't, you got him blocking shots, and he's supposed to have some offensive responsibilities. Somebody needs to be, you know, a consistent low post defender. Somebody needs to be getting rebounds down low. And we haven't really, we've been very spotty in that area. Even when guys have been good, they've been inconsistent.
And this is going to be a game today, I think, where Akook snapping out of this funk is going to be pretty important, because I think the only really useful player that Memphis has that isn't either injured or quit the team right now is Precious Achiuwa.
Yeah.
Remember him?
No.
Okay.
Never heard of him.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's tough for Akook because when we've got somebody whose job is to be a shot blocker, you need somebody who can hold down the block, and I don't know that there really is a lot of options for them for someone who can truly defend the low post. You know, we've been talking about this a lot, that I think actually Whaley's probably the best defender in the five, even though he's not a particularly strong, you know, back-to-the-basket kind of like low post defender. But he does so many other things really well. He's a good shot blocker. He's really good at guarding the pick and roll, which a lot of these teams, and I think Memphis does a lot of ISO. They do run a lot of pick and roll, so having Whaley on the floor might be helpful in disrupting the offense. But, like, the other thing I noticed about Whaley, and I'm totally skipping ahead to our next talking point, but a lot of the time I find myself very frustrated with Carlton because he gets the ball in the low post and doesn't go strong to the basket. Like, you're 7 feet tall, put the ball in the hoop, but, like, Whaley gets the ball down low and he dunks it. And, like, that's the kind of thing you need to have in your low post. And I think it'll be nice next year when we've got some more guys who can do that.
Yeah, I think they're definitely one player short in the front court.
Yeah.
And I think if Carlton was living up to what we all kind of expected from him in the beginning of the season, that might not be the case because both Akook and Whaley overall are overperforming.
Yeah.
But you're just seeing the, like, one trait each of them lack start manifesting in really negative ways, right? So, like, Carlton is really unathletic, mm-hmm. which is not necessarily the worst thing in the world, but teams have found a way to exploit that. Mm-hmm. So then Hurley's being forced to play Whaley, who is more athletic but not as strong. And all of this is putting Akook in worse defensive positioning, which is by far where he's most valuable.
Right.
So people have figured out, I mean, you watched it, like, people did not know about Akook at the beginning. He was just blocking shots every other possession. Then people learned to be afraid of him, and he started changing all the shots. And now people have adjusted to where when they get into the paint, they're just going hard at his chest. He's really good at not fouling, knock on wood,
yeah.
Which is great, but I think it's also impacting how other teams attack him on offense. And all of that comes down to Carlton just not producing at the level he should be, I think.
Yeah.
So that's not great.
No.
But, and I kind of wish, this is like particularly where I feel like we're really missing, you know, what we might have been able to get from Richie Springs this year. Hopefully when he becomes eligible and Brown Ferguson comes in next year, there'll be enough competition in the front court that we won't have to just sort of ride or die with guys with such obvious flaws. But you know, it's tough to see how that problem's going to get resolved this year without somebody remembering how to play basketball.
Well, let me ask, what do you think? Do you think they should just go small?
I feel like, though, when they had the opportunity to go small, like when they're playing against a smaller lineup and they can put Whaley at the four and it's like, it's, you know, Gaffney, Booknight, Vital, Gilbert, and Whaley on the floor. It ends up running really well, but it only works if they don't have anybody big on the floor. Like against, was it Cincinnati? Was that the, where they, Carlton had to play a lot of minutes just because they have large bigs and like Whaley gets pushed off the block. Even though I think, like I said, I think overall he's a better defender, but like he can only do so much because he's, you know, 6'9".
Yeah, and, you know, they only have, what, like 7 players now, so.
They have 8. Wilson is healthy now.
That's right. Sid's back.
Shout out, Sid. But it does sort of feel, and we predicted this, I think, at the beginning of the year, and I think it's probably going to be true universally until the talent level just reaches back to the heyday point, but, like, different guys are just going to be the ones who have to play every game. Like, last game, Brandon Adams was really good, and he was on the floor a lot down the stretch. Tonight, maybe it's Gaffney, you know, maybe it's Gilbert. And I think that's probably going to be especially true in the front court as well.
I agree.
Cool. We agree. I have no idea if anyone can hear us.
No,
nobody cares.
They're listening as much as is appropriate.
Yeah. It's kind of like a hostage
nobody
situation.
They're all paying us our due attention, which is to say,
if you can hear,
there's
bring
food.
Alcohol.
I would be, if I had food, I would be not participating.
Fair enough.
At least 4 of these people subscribe to the Dimeback podcast, and we'll listen to it later.
I'm really interested to see how this goes with Hot Boss trying to eat through this mask.
Find us on iTunes.
Yeah.
There we go.
Don't bother going to the site.
Seems
to be
working all right.
Yeah. Shout out Hot Boss.
So the other thing I wanted to talk about was the developments you're seeing in Hurley's second year. So obviously the record is probably not where we all wanted it to be, but I think there's been a lot of positives that we can take from it. What are some of those positives and maybe some negatives that you guys are seeing?
If Meech was here, he would say Dan Hurley, second year defensive leap, because that, I think, has been the biggest change from last year is how huge the improvement on defense has been, just the overall team defense. People know where they're supposed to be. They're playing really solid pressure defense, really tenacious, really tough defense. I don't have it in front of me, but I know that they're currently, I want to say, ranked in the top 50 in defense. And, oh, look at, we got Ken Pom.
Who can be sure?
Who can ever be sure?
44,
there we go. Top 50, I was right.
What were they last year?
They were over 100.
I got no Wi-Fi, Russ.
Okay.
They're up over 100.
I got the Ken Pom homepage open. That's as best as I can do right now.
But, I mean, I think the point still stands that, you know, when your team maybe lacks in some, you know, offensive areas, you can teach them how to play really solid defense. And I thought it was interesting. So Peter and I were at the Cincinnati game last week, and you had the 1990 team in the house. And it was just, to me, it was kind of an interesting parallel because, like, that was a team that sort of, like, created a UConn foundation, and, like, the style of UConn play was this, like, full court press, all game, you know, solid defense. Like, obviously they had some better scorers than we do. But it was an interesting sort of, like, parallel between that team that was so well-known for its defense and this team that's, like, it's living by its defense.
I think people are going to like your comp of 1990 UConn better than my comp of 2018 Rutgers.
Oh, jeez. Hey, Rutgers is going to the NCAA tournament this year.
I will say I'm a little concerned about the lack of progress they've made on offense. Like, yeah, they don't have a takeover scorer. But there are a lot of teams that don't have guys who can take over games on offense, and their offenses don't shut down the way ours does. Like, we've had teams in the past that didn't have an elite scorer, but they could still win games pretty consistently. You know,
I think a part of that is the upperclassmen maybe not being quite as good as they need to be, and the fact that the guys who actually have the high major talent are freshmen and sophomores, and they're not going to be consistent.
But I will say, over the last several games, they have managed to run their offense successfully, particularly when Gaffney's been in control of it, or even against Cincinnati at the end of the game when they had Vital running the offense. Like, they were still able to get they scored a bunch of points.
The improvement of Gaffney from the beginning of the year to now is one of the most promising signs.
But also, guys have been hitting shots. Like, we've been better lately because guys are hitting their threes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we're not hitting shots, we can't do anything. And, like, that's, like, I feel like under Calhoun, and granted, you know, nobody's going to beat Calhoun, but they could win those rock fight games without it turning into, like, you know, we're going to shoot 33% and score 55 points. which is what it turns into whenever we're not hitting threes. Like, they can't create any sort of consistent offense without that.
I think the development of those young kids is what encourages me the most, especially since we saw both Carlton and Polly last year take that leap. Like, obviously, Polly got hurt, and I think Carlton has regressed a little bit, but I also think, you know, they had limited ceilings based on limited physical gifts, and I think we're seeing what the vision looks like when you get really talented young kids and they start getting used to basketball, like at the collegiate level. And that's what I find the most encouraging. Because I do agree, like in the last, in the SMU game, you saw Adams, right, miss the three, open three that would have tied the game. And then you saw Book miss the
runner.
It was a tough runner, but it was like 15-foot runner. Those shots are going to fall with more reps. And just watching that and the way that both Adams and Gaffney have gone from, like, Adams last year was not very good.
He was unplayable.
Gaffney at the beginning of this year was not very good. And both of them look like they are D1 point guards right now. Like, it's easy to see the path to them being the starting backcourt in 2 years.
And actually, both of them are really, really good on-ball defenders.
Yeah.
And it's nice having to be able to put that many guys on the court who can defend and who can handle the ball. You know, even when they were playing at the end of the Cincinnati game, when they were playing with Gilbert and Gaffney on the bench, you still had Adams and Vital and Book who could all handle the ball. And so even though it's sort of counterintuitive, you know, end of the game, when you want somebody who's like a solid decision maker, normally you would not have your point guards on the bench, but they needed the size, they needed the free throw shooting, the regular shooting, and it ended up working out. But it's just very interesting to have so many guys who can fill that role even when your real point guards aren't playing.
I'm interested to see what he can do with Sid Wilson.
Yeah.
Who is, unlike those other sort of Ali era recruits, Sid has all the athleticism in the world.
Yeah.
And just needs the polish. So I'm wondering, you know, I'd be curious to see. There's no reason he can't be a really useful bench piece if given the chance, but I think that will be probably the most challenging developmental project on Hurley's future if he sticks around.
One other thing that I think has been a huge change, particularly from the Ali era, is seeing some set plays that work. That one that they ran at the end of OT against SMU with Gaffney running up the floor.
Yeah, got that really
cool. That was beautiful. That was sacks.
It was a great play call, and it was perfectly executed, which leads me to believe they've been practicing.
Practice? Talking about practice?
Talking about practice!
It's great seeing a team that practices.
Yeah. Like, I feel like we said this all the time during the Ali era. It's like, what are they doing during practice? I don't know what they're practicing. And I know what they're practicing because I can see them doing it in the game. I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know. But it's just nice to see you like, okay, I know that this team is improving. I know what they're doing in practice because every game I see them get better at something. Yep. I see them do something successfully that they didn't do 5 games ago. And you know, I'm willing to give a guy a lot of leeway when you can actually see the improvement that's significant from game to game.
So we'll do, like, big picture next year into the future stuff in a minute, but let's talk about the Memphis game right now.
Fuck Memphis.
Yeah, no, we don't like Memphis.
Are there children here before we swear too much?
Okay. Earmuffs.
They should learn now what to think about Memphis.
So Memphis obviously came in with high expectations. They're currently 68th in KenPom, having a pretty mediocre year.
They started the season at 50th in KenPom, so KenPom knew what was up.
Their best player, best recruit is not with the team anymore, predicted by Meech, I think, on this podcast.
He sure did.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
So I know, what do you, like, have you guys seen Memphis a lot?
You might say that we broke the James Wiseman news.
What are your
known to do about news.
So the thing about Memphis, other than, you know, garbage, is that, and we saw this in the first meeting between the two teams, they turn the ball over a lot. And if UConn is going to actually commit to pressing them early and often, they can get a lot of live ball turnovers, which I think is probably going to turn into their best offense, because then you don't have to maybe rely on Carlton versus Achiuwa in the half court.
I would prefer that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if they can get out in transition today, if they can get those turnovers and not have to run their half-guard offense as much, they have a really good chance of, honestly, like, not just winning, but, like, winning by, like, 10 points. If it goes according to plan. But that's what I want to see. I want to see, like, full-court press for 40 minutes.
I don't know.
Assuming we have the personnel for it.
That's the thing. Only having 8 healthy players, it might make it a little bit difficult.
Yeah, Book has to not foul today.
Are we up to 9 now with Sid back?
No, Sid made 8, I think.
So you got Carlton Whaley, Cook, Wilson, Book Knight, Vitale, Gilbert, Adams, and Gaffney. 9.
It's 9.
I do teach math.
This
sometimes.
Is his I'm Back podcast where we read the UConn roster every time we record. I will be reading selections from KenPom a little bit.
We are highly professional.
Yes.
I will say, historically, UConn and Memphis play the only watchable basketball games in the American Athletic Conference.
That's true.
So I'm hanging on to that today and thinking at least we'll see some points on the board.
That would be nice.
I insist
we've also
that we
historically
win.
Seen some just grotesquely officiated UConn-Memphis games, also terrified that our entire starting lineup will have 2 fouls in the first 4 minutes.
Important note about that is that Jeff Anderson, the hero of the Houston game, will be on the whistle today.
Cool. No!
I will not miss him next year.
Oh, no.
I will not either.
How are those refs so bad?
Will no one rid me of this troublesome ref?
Grab some glasses and cutlery to throw once you get inside tonight, folks.
Stuff your pockets
They're
with cornbread that you may huck at the refs during this
game. Yeah, bring batteries.
Let's do, so we had a pertinent mailbag question from Hurley Mania, whose hat is on our table.
Where is he?
Who? Zach.
We're reading your question.
Zach, we're reading your question.
Zach.
No, you don't need
to come
up.
No, you don't have to come up.
There.
You stay there.
This is
Hurley Mania.
How does the Penny Hardaway era end at Memphis?
Next year when he leaves to go to the NBA.
Gruesomely.
Notice of allegations?
No.
Like, here's my thing with this Memphis team. So, Penny was able to bring in this amazing recruiting class because he coached them all in high school and gave them money.
And paid some of them.
And so, like, this is completely unreplicable for the future. And this is the ceiling. This is the ceiling for this Memphis team, and it's not that good. So I don't think this is going to end well for Memphis.
If I was
should have kept Tubby.
If I was a Memphis fan, I would be extremely worried about having 0 commitments in the class of 2020 at this point.
I know that you wouldn't be very smart if you were a Memphis fan.
That is true. It is bad. Yes, I
that
can confirm
bad.
That's bad.
Can
however.
Confirm.
I know that they are in the final 3 or 4 for a couple of 5-star guys, but yeah, no,
has
exactly.
Checked,
if you're a 5-star recruit, go to Kentucky. Just,
has anyone
just
checked
do that.
FedEx's stock lately? I mean, it,
oh yeah, I don't know about
I
that.
I wonder if there's a correlation.
The bags are getting smaller.
Gary Parrish, come on the pod, you coward.
Is he here?
Gary Parrish, come on.
Gary
the pod.
Gary Parrish, if you're here, come to the stage.
Memphis is a tire fire.
Speaking of recruiting, did we want to talk about the players who are going to be here today? Not here.
Yes,
here.
Yes. We do.
Yes, do please talk about those players.
Yeah. Do you want me to read the list?
Well, I remember Zion Cruz was on there, who I did not really think we were going to be after, but
he's a 5-star.
Zion is coming to UConn.
Really good.
Tell us
the kind of guy that, like, if he comes in, like, he's the kind of freshman who's going to be an instant impact guy.
So he's a class of 2022.
21. 21? I think he's 21.
And he's at a new jersey?
Is it? No, it'd be 22.
I think the benefit of having Dan Hurley
as
a
jersey kid.
Coach.
So Andre Jackson and Javonte Brown Ferguson, the big problem, as he's known.
Oh my God, I love that nickname.
Will be there. Also in the house, Donovan Klingon, the Klingon.
The big kid.
Peter and I have seen him in person and I can confirm he is extremely
large. He's extremely tall.
Very tall.
This is a little behind the scenes of the Diamondback podcast where I mispronounce every recruit's name and then
I like Klingon
somebody
for
corrects
him.
Me and then I edit myself out so that nobody knows how bad I am at this.
I think if we get him, we should call him the Klingon.
Obviously.
Okay.
It's fine.
What's Mac's last name?
What's whose last name?
Etienne.
Mac Etienne? Yeah.
He's here. He's coming to the game.
I know.
Six
we're after
10.
A bunch of bigs for 2021.
He's one of them.
He's
at Suffield Academy, and it's promising to see these Connecticut recruits because I think it's important to be able to recruit your backyard, yeah. Personally.
I think he's a guy we're very
paging
seriously
Randy Edsel.
In on. I think we've got a good chance with him. I know that they're also very big on Sanogo, who's playing with Kuminga right now at, is that at Roselle? One of those Jersey Catholic schools.
They should all come to UConn.
But I think they really want two bigs for 21, so those two would be great. But Etienne, and I know Sanogo's visiting, and Etienne's here today, so hopefully that works out.
So, Zion Cruz, you said you didn't think we were really in on him.
I mean, usually, you know, I never think we're going to get a five-star guy.
He's, like, currently ranked somewhere around 20 in the class.
Yeah.
Who else? Do we know who else is in on that guy? I'm assuming it's your Kentuckys and North Carolina and what have you.
Yeah, I mean, it's the usual suspects. I'm sure he's a Jersey kid, so probably Duke is involved.
Yeah.
They can't all go to Kentucky.
That's what we used to think, and then they got like 9 recruits a year.
Yeah, that's true. But they have a finite number of scholarships.
And not every kid in New Jersey wants to go live in Kentucky.
True.
Strong point.
For reasons.
I mean, does anyone want to live in Kentucky?
I mean, if you're at the school and you're a superhero, it's probably pretty nice.
Justified fans, cousin affectionists.
Strong point. Strong point.
Cousin affectionists?
Yeah.
He's making an inbreeding joke.
Thank God.
I don't know.
Seriously, we could say whatever we want and no one would know.
We've been making inbreeding jokes up here and no one is listening.
This is literally
we poisoned all of the food.
The food looks
you're
good.
All eating poison.
So, Peter, who is... So there's probably one open spot next year. Who do you want taking that spot?
I don't... I mean... Obviously, Cliff would be great. That would be an instant impact big man, which we could definitely use. But I think they're probably going to be looking at a backcourt player. I mean, if Gilbert goes, I think probably you look at a grad transfer, someone who can do something right away. Hopefully, someone who can shoot.
Seth Towns, perhaps.
That could be good. That could work, as long as he can stay healthy.
Well, yeah, he hasn't been healthy in 2 years.
So, you know.
A shooter would be nice. I feel like we're probably going to be fine, you know, between Cole and Gaffney. You know, with the main ball handler roles, so getting a straight shooter would be nice. And assuming Polly's back, you know, the thing that's like the biggest bummer about Polly is he had his best game before he broke himself. Like great rebounds, you know.
Yeah, he really sold the devil on that one.
And then he got broke, and it's just like I feel bad for the kid because like who knows what he's going to do with the rest of the season.
Turns out that the reason he wasn't rebounding is he was just being too careful. And he was like, that's it, I'm going to get all the rebounds. And then he broke his knee.
Broken.
R.I.P. Tyler Polly.
So,
rest in Polly.
That's a nice segue into talking a little bit about next year and the years to come.
Yeah.
How bullish are you guys on the futures?
We're going to win every national championship.
Forever?
Forever.
Okay.
Until the eventual heat death of the universe.
Yep.
I mean, I'm expecting UConn to have a top 25 preseason rating next year. That's what I'm expecting. I think with the class coming in addition to the players that are currently here, I think they legitimately have a shot at being ranked to start the season.
I think that might be dependent on who comes in and via the grad transfer route.
Yeah. And also how we finish out this year.
Right, yeah. That too. Like if they actually do win the AAC tournament, which
they'll
absolutely
definitely
are
be ranked
going to
in
do,
next season.
Yes.
Then, you know, play a game or two in the NCAA tournament, it's a whole different... Or if they go to the NIT and win the whole thing.
That would probably do it, too.
Yeah. It would actually be kind of fun. Like,
or if they go to the NCAA tournament and win the whole thing.
I mean, hey, listen. You know, the thing is, like, if that happened, I would be ecstatic, of course, but, like, then you know you got kids going to the NBA at the end of the year.
Fine. Replace
like,
them.
I would really, really love to have a team next year that's good from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. I miss watching a team that's ranked all year that you can actually enjoy being good and beating the shit out of other people. I miss that, and I would like to have it again.
We miss you, Hashim Thabeet.
Do you guys think the additions of Springs and Brown Ferguson are going to be enough to overcome the current shortcomings in the front court?
Don't forget Andre Jackson.
It's not really... in the Whaley, Cook, Carlton family.
I mean, Jackson's going to play at the four at some point. Like, they're going to use him the way they use Sid, at least part of the time. I guess the thing with just adding depth up front means that when one of those guys is playing the way they've been playing, you don't have to play that guy.
Yeah.
And hopefully, one of the five will be productive on any given day.
What do you think Carlton can do next year?
If he's as good as he was last year, he's a starting caliber player. Like, there's no reason he shouldn't be at least that good. But he's not.
If he falters again, who do you think is the starting center? Do you think they go with Cook and...
It's hard to say. I mean, Brown Ferguson looks very raw, but he's definitely most talented. It'll be interesting to see what's happened with Springs over the course of this year. I mean, he's practicing with the team. You know, maybe he could steal some minutes. I think certainly that Carlton's going to get the first shot at it, but we'll see.
I think certainly a good sign is that Cook, you know, had that semester with the team, just practicing with them, not playing competitively, and came in and looked cromulent immediately.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I don't think Springs is quite as talented as a Cook, but I could see him being a starting caliber player.
The way I mean that's encouraging is that it seems like Hurley has the ability to develop guys even when they're not getting time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we were kind of talking about this in reference to, like, other transfers who've come into UConn and had to sit a year, because we were talking about it in the context of Cole, who's obviously had to sit out this year, and I think it's probably likely that the practices that Hurley runs are more likely to keep kids at a high level than maybe they were under the previous regime.
Here's a mailbag question from Ben Baldwin on Twitter, who says...
Shout, Ben.
All right. Rank, who do you think the top three scorers will be on next year's team?
James Bouknight.
Yeah, Bouknight's going to be one. I think Cole, two. And you know what? Let's do it. A Cook number three.
I might go Gaffney, you know, three.
Cole might be number one.
Cole could be number one. I think Bouknight will be number one.
I mean, maybe I'm basing this on what he did at Howard. But that's all he did was score.
Yeah, he put up video game numbers at Howard.
He put up 21 a game.
But to be fair, that was the shittiest league in the country.
Yes.
So I'm expecting like 14, 15 with five assists. Uphill for
Howard is not in the American Athletic Conference.
But didn't Cole have...
Not yet. They will be joining next year.
Didn't Cole have his best games out of conference, though? Didn't he?
I mean, I don't know if he had his best games out of conference. He had some good games. He had a nice game against Georgetown, for example. But he's a volume scorer, so he's going to use a lot of possessions when he's playing on a team like that. I think he's just going to end up taking a lot fewer shots playing on a much better team.
Are you at all worried about the adjustment in the quality of opponents?
Well, I mean, to an extent, but he's been practicing against...
I meant for the whole team.
When they go to the Big East. Not so much, because they have performed well against the good teams they faced, including out of conference when they're playing Big East caliber teams.
They
should have won at Villanova.
Yep.
So I don't think I'm that worried about it. They should have beat Xavier. They should have beat Indiana. You know, they're this close on all those teams next year.
I mean, when you've got seven games this season that they've lost by 7 points or less, and I just think of, like, if those games had gone the other way, how different we would feel about this team.
If we were 3-4 in those games.
Just flipping three results in those games completely changes the outlook of this season.
Completely. And I think it's not even a question of, like, they didn't play well enough or whatever. It's just, like, those are close games, and they were incredibly unlucky that they all went against them, because that's not going to happen every year.
I'm trying to keep my expectations guarded, because I genuinely don't know what happens the first time this team, as talented as they're going to be, goes to Creighton and sees a real opposing crowd. You know, like...
That's true.
There are just levels...
Well, they did okay at Memphis.
Good teams night after night, which, like, they have a tough time with bad teams on occasion now, and there is just not a break in that conference.
No, there really isn't. And I mean, obviously, from a fan perspective, that's a really exciting thing about the league, is that you're not playing any, like, absolute, like, garbage programs like ECU or Tulane or whatever. Like, there's no...
ECU joining the AAC next year.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Congrats,
there's no
ECU
stuffing on that schedule. It's all, like... And I'm, like, thrilled about it. And I'm going to probably go to a ton more basketball games next year, just because all the opponents are going to be more fun.
Yeah. I'm extremely excited. I'm, like, keeping my expectations at a level where I think it's possible and probably likely that we're not going to see the progress right away in the win-loss record, just because the competition level is rising as UConn is developing.
I will throw a temper tantrum and say things that get made fun of for months afterwards.
As long as we're moving up in KenPom, though, then I'm fine.
But to be fair, aren't we moving from what is the, like, around about the seventh best conference in the country to, like, the second best conference
yes.
in the country? I mean, just top to bottom, it's just going to be significantly higher quality. What did the Big East post recently that they had, like, eight teams inside, or, oh, no, all of their teams were inside the KenPom top 80 or something like
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Which is
ridiculous.
Bonkers. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, like, people make a lot of jokes about DePaul, but they're good. Like, they're good again, or for the first time, yeah. you know.
Yeah. They're
well, they seem to be
good.
Able to bring in talent yeah, again.
Well, I mean, they're not, like, laughing stock DePaul. Like, everyone makes a joke about DePaul being absolute, like, hot garbage, but, like, they're actually pretty decent now. In all seriousness, I would love for Dave Lato to turn them into, like, a real program again. That would be really fun.
I hope Dave Lato wins every single game that's not against UConn.
That's right.
Yeah, and DePaul's got 2 4-stars coming in next year.
And they're actually starting to recruit Chicago, finally, it seems.
Finally.
How crazy is that? Recruiting your hometown.
As long as we keep getting the Ryan Boatwright so they can have the rest.
Yeah.
We should talk to UConn football about recruiting their home state.
Yeah. You would think that you would want to convince kids to come to the state flagship university when they go to school in state, but like, what do I know?
You don't want, if you have to convince kids, you don't want them.
That's right.
You only want kids who already want to go to the worst college football program in FBS.
Definitely don't want to do any recruiting.
No issues.
No issues from anybody. Certainly not our program. There are definitely no issues there.
All right, so we got like 5 minutes left. Give me some of your predictions. Well, first, let's go tonight, or today. What's your prediction for today's game?
91-36, we're going to win.
All right, I like it. Bold.
We're going to win.
Well, I have to say we're going to win now. Well, no one's listening, though.
If Meech was here, he'd say we're going to lose.
Yeah. Do I need to be the Meech?
Meech would say game's already over.
Yeah, no, Memphis 85, UConn 61.
Get out of here.
See,
no, UConn by three. UConn 75, Memphis 72.
If you pick a three-point score and you don't say 77-74, you got to get the fuck out of here with that, man.
All right, UConn 77, Memphis 74.
Yay.
Still under the spread. Still under the spread, you lame pessimist.
Oh.
What is the spread?
Four.
It's four. We're going to win. We're going to beat the spread. We're going to win by 10.
What's their KenPom? 60?
68, something like that.
And we are?
60?
Something like that.
We're better.
62.
62. I can live with 62. Just keep going up.
Home game. Sold out. Crowd should be nuts.
Yeah.
I intend to be nuts.
We're pouring beers into all these folks.
Everybody in this room better be wild and crazy at this game today.
Is everybody here
drunk? We need to agree on, as a group, some offensive things we can chant at Memphis.
No one cares.
What's the worst thing about Memphis?
Memphis.
Memphis, the University of Memphis.
Memphis Community College.
Memphis State University.
I would say that tweet they sent.
What is library?
But I definitely didn't Photoshop.
Nope.
You can't prove it.
It's real.
They must have deleted it out of shame.
Yeah.
Or because their fingers are clumsy.
Well, you know, so many have been blown off in gin brewing accidents.
Lawnmower accidents.
This is extremely classist, and I'm offended.
All right, and so let's close. Give me your prediction for next year. What are you feeling right now?
Undefeated national championship, as always.
They're going to win 27 games next year.
Top four finish in the Big East and a first-round bye in the Big East tournament.
Okay. I think 22 wins and a 6 seed.
I take that.
I would... absolutely take that right now.
Like, I want 25 wins. 25 or bust.
That's right, Peter.
Or I'll get those extra wins in the NCAA tournament.
I'll allow it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That didn't take as long as I thought.
No.
All right. Are we done pod?
We should give a shout out, even though David Benedict Cumberbatch was unable to join us. We should give a shout out to... Can we? Should we?
Yeah.
I guess we're in a different restaurant right now. We probably shouldn't.
Seems rude.
I was refraining,
but... You guys know where David Benedict Cumberbatch wants you to eat and drink. So just do that.
Yeah.
Another time, after you're done here,
yeah,
go to the game, and then tonight.
Shout out to Meech, who doesn't like the people here enough to join, but he's home doing
nothing. Imagine staying in New Jersey rather than coming up for this.
I can't. Why do you think half of the New Jersey high school recruits are here today?
That's right.
Yeah.
Meech should have just ridden up with Zion Cruz.
Could have carpooled, yeah.
Could get some better pizza.
Ooh, bird.
They could have shared the same private jet.
All right,
everybody. Well, thank you so much. Thank you to the Husky Ticket Project and the Susie Foundation again.
And most of all, thank you to all of you for paying so much attention to us.
We really appreciate
all the careful listening. Hey, one shout out for my boy Chris Licata right here.
Chris.
What up? MVP of the A Dime Slack.
And to Hot Balls.
And to Hot Balls, of course.
Hot Balls.
So he'll be up later. No idea who that is.
Nope.
On account of his luchador.
One of life's,
Senor Hot Balls.
One of life's great mysteries.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thank you.
Then we're done.
All right.
Please clap.